So the Marsha says that this is exactly the point of the Parsha. Even though your intentions are noble and you're doing something l'shem shamayim, if what you're doing is an avera, you're still going to be killed for it. That's the entire point. It's not ratzon Hashem to put yourself in such a position, and a person should never put himself in such a position where he has to sin in order to help somebody else. If that comes to you, then you have no choice, but you can't put yourself in a position to do so. That's the point of the Mekoshesh. Rosh Sternbach talks about this as well. He says there are many people who say that their Judaism is stuck in their heart, and that's good enough. That's not true at all. We have to continue to strive to do more and more mitzvos, no matter that our intentions are l'shem shamayim. Remember, Rosh Sternbach lived in South Africa, and I'm sure there were many, many traditional Jews who didn't necessarily keep everything when it came to the law itself, and that's what he was trying to say. It doesn't matter that your intentions are l'shem shamayim, because you need to do what you're supposed to do. Rav Wolfson seems to indicate that this is one of the reasons that Mekoshesh only had daughters and not sons. The reward for keeping Shabbos is having a nachla b'li mitzarim, an inheritance that doesn't have any borders, no limitations whatsoever. And when he broke Shabbos, he lost the ability to have a nachla to children, to sons. That was the whole chiddush, that the daughters got the nachla instead. That's the chiddush for Wolfson over here. That's why he had daughters, not sons. The Sizach Chumim says it's clear that he continued to do what he was doing after he was warned not to, because the pasuk says the word mikoshesh as opposed to the word koshash or koshesh. Mikoshesh means he continued to do so, while koshesh means he did it. He kept doing it until he was taken before Moshe Rabbeinu. He did it the entire time. The Ibn Ezra also says that he did it on purpose, although he says it a little bit differently. He didn't say that it's l'shem shamayim. He said that he was doing it on purpose in order to be, that he was actually killed, and he was wrong for doing so. The Ora Chaim HaKadosh proves it from the words mikoshesh eitzim b'yom HaShabbos. It should have said b'yom HaShabbos mikoshesh eitzim. On the day of Shabbos, he was collecting wood. No, he was mikoshesh eitzim because it was Yom HaShabbos. That's how he says, based on the diktuk itself, that he already knew that it was Shabbos. There's a great story in the Alina L'Shabbach about a person who was chozer b'tshuva because of what happened to him and his friend on Shabbos, but that's not for now. In Shabbos Tzadi Zayin, Rabbi Kiva Darshan said the mikoshesh was Slavchad, the father of the five brilliant women who were zochad introduced Parshas Nachlos to Bnei Yisrael from Gzera Shava of Midbor. That's how Rabbi Kiva says it. The guy who was the mikoshesh, he says it's Slavchad, and he says Gzera Shava. Midbor here, Midbor in another place, must be that this guy is Slavchad itself. Rabbi Yehuda Misera yells at Rabbi Kiva and tells him that if the pasuk hit it, why would you reveal that information? The pasuk didn't say his name, so why would you have to say his name? You shouldn't have said his name. And if it's not true, and you know it's not Slavchad, then you're being motzi laz on somebody who's a great tzaddik, on Rabbi Kiva, on Slavchad, who's a great tzaddik, and you're saying that he was the mikoshesh. How could you do that? So the Gemara asks, but Rabbi Kiva was quoting a Gzera Shava. You can't make up a Gzera Shava. You have a Gzera Shava from your Rebbein. So how could Rabbi Yehuda Misera argue on a Gzera Shava? I mean, your svar is right. Maybe you're, you know, it's not revealed. But nonetheless, you can't argue on that. So the Gemara answers, Rabbi Yehuda didn't have that Gzera Shava. He didn't have it. So Tosis asks, why didn't he learn it from Rabbi Akiva, who certainly had it from his Rebbein? Rabbi Akiva didn't make stuff up. So why wouldn't he learn it from him? And he answers, a famous Tosos, that everyone had a certain number of Gzera Shavas that they had, and you couldn't add on to it. Rabbi Yehuda Misera already had his number of Gzera Shavas. So when Rabbi Akiva came along and wanted to teach another one, he said, I can't learn that one. So he didn't have it, and it didn't work. So Rabbi Eliezer Simcha Wasserman, this Rabbi Chanan Wasserman's son, says the Aruch answers differently. Rabbi Akiva never got this Gzera Shava from his Rebbe. But how could that be? Gzera Shava has to be learned from Rebbe. You can't make it. So he says, maybe there's a difference between Midos, which are used to Darshan the Torah, like the Yud Gimel Midos that we say in the beginning of our davening right before Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbos, and Ramazan that the Baal HaTorah brings everywhere. Those hints are true, but you can't paskin based on a remez. Just because there's a gematria that works out well, you can't paskin based on that. But you could paskin based on a Midah. Once we know a halacha, you can pinpoint the halacha by using a remez, by using a gematria or a Rosh HaTevis or something like that, in order to learn something from it, to figure out where it was from. But you cannot paskin based on a remez itself, and that's that. So possibly there's two types of Gzera Shavas, he says. Maybe there's a Gzera Shava that's used in order to paskin. In other words, that's one of the Yud Gimel Midos, and that's something you got to learn from your Rebbe. There's another Gzera Shava that's just a remez. And that remez, although you can't paskin from it, it could be used to be able to make something up and try to figure it out. And Rabbi Yehuda Misera argued to Rabbi Akiva because Rabbi Akiva was making up a Gzera Shava that was a remez. And he said, that's not good enough. You can't say that. And that's how he was able to argue with it. That's another answer. The Chassam Sofer answers a different way. Rabbi Yudim Becerra told Rabbi Akiva he's being motzi laz by saying he was a makoshish. But then Rabbi Yudim Becerra goes along and says, oh, by the way, so who was Slavchad? He was one of the Ma'pilim. One of the people, after the Meraglim was over, he was one of the people who ran up the mountain and were killed by Amalek, or the Plishtim, when they tried to get into Eretz Yisrael. So hold on a second. Well, you're being motzi laz, Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Yudim Becerra, you yourself are being motzi laz and Rabbi Akiva. You're saying that he's one of the Ma'pilim. So how could he say such a thing? How is that possible? So Rabbi Yehuda, it's possible that Rabbi Yehuda was saying Mimanapshach, right? Slavchad's daughter already said that their father was a sinner. It says Becheto Meis. They went up to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said Becheto Meis. Our father died through his own sin. So it's clear he did something wrong. If he did it L'shem Shemayim, there's no way they would have said it. So clearly Slavchad was a sinner. Even his own daughters said that he was a sinner. The only problem is, if you say he's a Mekoshesh, right, then you're saying like this. The Mekoshesh was a sinner. The Mekoshesh did it L'shem Shemayim. You're being motzi laz not on Slavchad, because Slavchad we already know did something wrong. You're being motzi laz on the Mekoshesh, because how could you say the Mekoshesh did something wrong when the Gemara seems to say, or the Midrashim seem to say, that he did it L'shem Shemayim? Rabbi Yudim Becerra's problem was not on Rabbi Akiva calling Slavchad the Mekoshesh. Slavchad was actually one of the Ma'pilim. His problem was that you're calling the Mekoshesh Slavchad. And if you're calling the Mekoshesh Slavchad, then you're saying that the Mekoshesh sinned. If you're saying that the Mekoshesh sinned, then you're saying something bad about the Mekoshesh, not about Slavchad itself. That is a brilliant, brilliant shot. I love that. So the Das HaKenim and the Rosh both say we know it's Slavchad because of the Gematria. Eitzim Beis is the Gematria of Slavchad himself, with both 212. Rabbi Noah Fein says, Bamidbor, Vayimtsu Ish is 712, which is the same as Zeh Vizehut Slavchad. Ben Chefer Matzo, which is not bad, right? That's Rabbi Ephraim. He also says that Ish is 311, which is one off of Zehut Slavchad, right? So I gotta love the Rabbi Ephraim. Oh, no, I'm saying Mi Zehu. Gosh, I hate this. This is the computer. Mi Hu Zed, that's right. Mi Hu Zed, Zed Slavchad. That's 311 altogether. We're gonna take a guess on that. Okay, the Zohar on page 157a says that once Moshe Rabbeinu heard Slavchad's name mentioned in reference to his daughters by Hashem, he knew that Slavchad's sin was forgiven. He was mentioned, his sin must have been forgiven. This Sfasam is asked, but we know there are many Rishonim that are mentioned throughout the entire Torah. Paro's name is mentioned, Lavan's name is mentioned, Avi Melech's name is mentioned. So that doesn't prove that you're a tzaddik just because your name is mentioned. So how do we know that he was forgiven just because his name was mentioned? It could be that since his name was mentioned in reference to something good, then we know his sin is forgiven. That's possible. However, it could be the Klal of the Zohar applies only after death. If the Torah mentions you while you're still alive, like Esav or Paro or whatever it is, then they're evil. If it mentions you after they died, then you know that they're a big tzaddik. That's when you know that their sin was forgiven. Korach is not a proof, because it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu was mentioning Bnei Korach by name to show you what not to do. So just because Korach's name was mentioned afterward, that's not Hashem mentioning Korach's name. That is Moshe Rabbeinu saying, Ubnei Korach lo mesu, or that Korach do not be like Korach itself. So that's not a raya, but everybody else, in this case, somebody like Slavchad, it would be that way. That's how you would understand the Zohar. The Rabbeinu Bechai asks why we have to mention this took place in the desert. It happened by Midbor, as soon as it came to the desert. So what's the point of mentioning it happened in the desert? Where else would it have taken place? He answers in Pshat, this shows how bad he was. Even though the Jews had tremendous miracles happening for them with the Mon, the Aaron, and the Akavod, he still did what he did. Or, you could say Avergur as Aver, once he started sitting in the desert with the Egel Azov, then it continued with this as well, right? This Aver continued as well. His third answer is that it hints to the well-known halakha that when one is in the Midbor and is not sure when Shabbos is, you got to count 6 days, and then Shabbos automatically the seventh day. That's what you have to do. That's halakha. Even though he's in the Midbor and he's not sure when Shabbos is, that's not a legitimate excuse, and still you're chayav for breaking Shabbos, as we see by Tzlafchad itself, and that's that. The Ramban answers that this event took place right after the Meraglim, that because they had to stay in the desert for a bit longer, people got restless, and this is what happened. And that's what happened, that Tzlafchad happened right then. We mentioned that up above, right? We said that it happened right after the Meraglim themselves. Baal Torah argues this took place at the same time as the Megadeth, the cursor, and that would mean the Mekalel, the guy who cursed out God's name. That means it happened earlier, since the Psukim mentioned the word Megadeth and the punishment for someone who does so, right? That's the idea. Right before these Psukim of Tzlafchad, or of the Mekoshesh, it goes into what happens if you're Megadeth Hashem. That's the connection between the two. Rashi says says this is the second week that we're told about Shabbos. Second week after Mara, or second week after Matan Torah, when they're told about Shabbos. And the Gemara says that had we only kept two Shabbosos, everything would have been okay. And Slavchud broke that. The Mekoshesh broke that. The Rush and the Dasakanim say, we know this because it says, Vayu Vayintzu. After they were told about it, immediately they found someone doing so, someone breaking Shabbos. There's an amazing Nafka meeting here by the Chassam Sofer and Torah's Moshe, which we're not going to do right now. The Rishonim all say the word Vayintzu is used because Moshe Rabbeinu used to send out policemen to go find out if people were doing wrong, so there would people be watching for everybody else. That's what the judges were. There were 87,000 judges. What was the need for all those judges? There were that many cases? No, there weren't that many cases. They were judges that were also policemen. They went around to go see what was going on, and they would punish people that were doing something wrong. They would bring them in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. What Victor Miller says is the trend is my lamida of this great people. They were on a very high level, but they didn't rely on that. They were always looking out for one another and helping each other from doing anything wrong. This is something we can learn from. It's not for the fact that people who would do this obviously would do it in the wrong way, and people would be obviously upset at one another. Rav Schwab says we use the term B'nai Yisrael here, even though it's a gnus that they weren't able to keep two Shabbosos, because they were on such a high level in the Midbar that the Chilul Shabbos of one Jew was enough, like a tiny ink stain on a pristine white shirt. Says Rav Schwab, that's why we call them B'nai Yisrael even here. Chazal tell us this is a degradation of B'nai Yisrael, that they couldn't keep two Shabbosos. So there Yosef says, why was it so degraded? Moshe Rabbeinu sent out Shomrim. They saw the guy doing it. They warned him like they were supposed to. They told him, if you do this, then you're going to be killed. And he did it, and he was killed. So why is that a degradation? B'nai Yisrael did exactly what they were supposed to do. So why is that a bad thing altogether? So he says, there's an inyan of Shmira by Shabbos, since the word Zachor and Shomrim go together. You can't keep Shabbos if you don't have Shmiras Shabbos. It doesn't exist by any other mitzvah. If you don't have Shmiras Shabbos, you're not keeping Shabbos in the first place. That's what he says over here. Although someone is punished for not protesting when seeing someone do an Avera, right? It doesn't mean that when you don't protest, you get the Avera. By Shabbos, if you don't protest, this is how he's saying it, then you end up getting the Avera itself. You become part of that Avera. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it says that his cow went out with straps between its horns against the will of the Chachamim, but he didn't do it. It was someone else that did it. He just didn't protest. But it says, if he did it, that's how the Gemara words it. So it goes that way, and that's the idea. So when you're not protesting on Chilul Shabbos, that's the problem. So they saw him breaking Shabbos. That's true. They told him to stop. But then they let him keep on doing it until they brought him to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's one thing that you have a shomer that's saying, don't do this, don't do this. But you have to have a shomer that's stopping the person from doing it. They didn't do it, and therefore they're blamed along with a guy because they allowed him. It's mamil, like they all broke Shabbos. Maybe that's another reason why the Pasuk says they were in the Midbar. Just like the desert is an area that can't be guarded, so too this sin was unable to be guarded in their current state because he had shomrim watching for people, but not shomrim who were willing to stop people, and that's the degradation of B'nai Yisrael. The Chizkuni says that the reason why is because even though Chala and some of the other mitzvahs we mentioned don't start until they enter Eretz Yisrael, Shabbos was a mitzvah that started even while they were in the desert, and thus this man was killed for breaking. And the Chidah says the same idea as well. Mekosh is the Gemara of 740, which is Shabbos Lamedches. So all B'nai Yisrael would keep Shabbos for the next 38 years. That's the whole point over here, to do it. Then Netziv thought, says that they thought that they were potter because they were originally in Golos now, just like they didn't have to bring Korbanos anymore, because in the Midbar you didn't have to bring Korbanos, maybe you wouldn't have to keep Shabbos either, and that was their problem. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh says an unbelievable idea. He says, the Gemara that we explained up above, where Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Shmuel, that the sin of the Mekoshet was because they carried wood for four Amos and Rosh Hashanah. That was the sin. The Mekoshet carried wood, so it's Hotzah. Normally, a desert would never be considered Rosh Hashanah, since there are not so many people living there. At this time, there were 3 million Jews living there, so it would certainly have the status of the Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, the Pasuk have said, "Vayu B'nai Yisrael b'Midbar," because B'nai Yisrael were in a desert, it made the desert into Rosh Hashanah. Because it made the desert into Rosh Hashanah, that means that this was Hotzah. And if it was Hotzah, that means he was carrying and Chayav Misa, and therefore they killed him. Not bad, right? So that's the idea. The Maral Diskin says the exact same thing. But the Rambam Paskins differently. Rambam says that a Midbar is always a Rosh Hashanah, even nowadays, because it was when the Jews were there. Since it was at one time, it's always Rosh Hashanah. But then why would the Pasuk have to say B'nai Yisrael were in the desert? Anyway, it would have been, the desert would have been a place. Maybe the Rambam holds like the other opinion, that the Mekoshesh was either uprooting plants from the ground, as we said before, Tolesh, or piling up Ma'amer, but not the carrying issue. The problem is that desert sand sand doesn't have the ability to allow things to grow. So how did things grow there? What was there for him to pile up? Or for, to carry, that makes sense, but to pile up into to whatever, what is that? So he answers, this is what the Rambam said, what we'd have to say for the Rambam. The Medrash tells us, and this is from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh and the Maral Diskin as well, that the Be'er Shel Miriam went with wherever they went and caused the plants to grow for the animals to eat. It was those plants that this man uprooted, and that's what he ended up doing over here. The Chassam Sofer, we're going to try to end with this. The Chassam Sofer and Torah's Moshe combines these two answers, come out with an amazing shot. There's no way the Jews thought that they weren't chayiv and mitzvahs anymore just because of the Meraglim. There's no way they thought, like, oh, now we don't have to keep Shabbos. That doesn't make any sense, says the Chassam Sofer. What they thought is that the Midbar no longer had the status of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Why did they think that way? The Gemara in Erevin says the reason the Midbar is Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is that even though they weren't koveya in one place at all, because we say, Al-Pi Hashem Yachnu V'Yiso, that's right, Al-Pi Hashem Yachnu V'Yiso, they had to travel through Hashem's word, it was as if they were koveya bin koma. After the Meraglim, they assumed that they would no longer have the privilege of traveling together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It wasn't Al-Pi Hashem Yiso, Al-Pi Hashem Yachnu anymore. If so, then the Midbar was no longer Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. The Midbar was now a Karmelis, and therefore you could carry there. This is the reason for the Ma'pilim as well. The Ma'pilim thought, we no longer travel with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so if we want to travel on our own and go to Eretz Yisrael on our own, we're now allowed to. That was their entire problem. Their assumption was that they were allowed to go in at any point, because once it was broken, right, no longer is it Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, now they were allowed to go in. That's the idea. Slavchud, says the Chassam Sofer, was one of the Ma'pilim, like Rabbi Yudim Becerra said up above. He's one of the Ma'pilim. But then he did tshuva, and he wanted to show everyone how wrong he was. The assumption was that there was no Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, that he purposely carried in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Why? To show that just like the Ma'pilim were wrong, right, he wanted to prove that the Midbar still had the status of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was still with them, and if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was still with them, it's still Al-Pi Hashem Yachnu, Al-Pi Hashem Yiso, and if so, it really is Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, that shows how he's L'Shem Shamayim. So Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yudim Becerra were both correct. He was one of the Ma'pilim, and he was the Makoshish. And he was proving that it's L'Shem Shemayim Nisgavin, and made it into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. This is the Chida. The Chida says the Makoshish is Shabbos Lamaches, right? He kept all 38 Malachos of Shabbos. But he took off one Malacha of Shabbos, Hotzah, to help people understand that Hashem was still with them. That's the idea. The Chassam Sofer again in Torah's Moshe asks on this idea and says, he understands the other two answers, that Makoshish can mean piling up wood or pulling something out of the ground. But how can the word Makoshish mean carrying? Makoshish, you could say, means piling up, or maybe means to pull out. But how does it mean carrying? The Malbim discusses it and says, you know what it's referring to? It's not referring to what he was doing. The Makoshish is what his job was. He was a Makoshish for a living. That's why it says there's a word Makoshish in Shabbos. You know, from days it says a carpenter is not allowed to walk outside on Shabbos with a twig in his ear, since that's the normal way for them to walk, carrying their professional business cards. Their professional business cards were in their ear, showing people what they were. Anyone else would be putter for carrying a twig in their ear, but he would be chayiv. If so, it could be that this man was a Makoshish for a living. He uprooted or piled up plants, and they caught him on Shabbos purposely carrying his business card outside, and that's why they killed him. Mr. Dupree rejects that idea, saying he was not a Makoshish for a living, brother, he was a Makoshish at the time, but that means because he, the Sifri holds, because he was pulling it out of the ground and he was piling up. According to the Gemara that says that he was carrying, then they could say that the Makoshish is actually referring to his job, not what he was doing at the time. What he was actually doing at the time is carrying. That's how the Chassam Sofer puts all of those Pshatim together. It's one of the most unbelievable Chassam Sofers of all time. There's a Chassam Sofer and a Panini Kedem over here that we're going to skip right now, and also the Shouts to his Shoal Meshiv, but I'm going to end with this over here. The Gemara Shabbos Kufnun mentions a story about a Chassid that wanted to put up a fence around his field on Shabbos and decided not to do so. It was a chassid. He wanted to put up this fence because he knew that his field was going to be stolen from, but he said, you know what? I'm not going to do it. A miracle happened for him, and a caper bush grew around his field. A caper bush in Hebrew is known as tzlaf. Tzadi lamed pei. Not only did it protect his field, but he also used it for his parnassa as well. The berries and the leaves and everything else he was able to sell and use it for parnassa. Strange Gemara. Anybody who keeps Shabbos is going to get a tzlaf go around his field. This guy almost did a malacha on Shabbos, and he's rewarded with getting parnassa for the rest of his life. So the Ramami Pano says, Slavchud's first Gilgal was a different man in Shabbos Tzadi Mabez, who was found riding a horse on Shabbos and was killed. Why was he killed? You're not chayiv misa for riding a horse on Shabbos. Chazal saw that they had to make a geder, through him. He did something wrong, and they knew that people were going to follow, so they made a gather by killing someone who only rode his horse on Shabbos. Tzlapchud was used to make a gather when people were breaking Shabbos. The same way that Tzlapchud did it in the Torah to stop people from breaking Shabbos, he was killed later on in another Gilgal to stop people from breaking Shabbos. Says the Al-Kurvani, if a person is able to accomplish everything he's supposed to in this world except one thing that he wasn't able to finish, he comes back in a Gilgal and does it in a different way, said he gets his kapara. This chassid was also Tzlapchud. He had a tremendous nisayan to break Shabbos, right? Since he had done so, he had broken Shabbos, albeit l'shem shamayim in his previous life. And he was metakin his chait, and so he had a tremendous riches in this world and the next by not putting up fence. He had such an nisayan, something that we can't understand, and then he got it. Hence the remez. Tzlapchud, one tzlaf, Tzlapchud, was the bush that grew up for him. Says Wolfson, once again, you see the idea of making a geder from Tzlapchud in his Gilgulim. Sometimes his death is the actual geder, and sometimes it's his actions, the actions of the guy. Now, what I think is the following. Maybe what this means is like what we mentioned above. If the reward for Shabbos is a nachla b'li mitzarin, you get a border, you get an inheritance that is limitless, right? No borders. This guy wanted to break Shabbos by making mitzarim around his field. He wanted to make borders around his field. When he didn't do so, he was rewarded with parnasa, so to speak, money without limitations. That's the reward they ended up getting for keeping Shabbos properly. Shkach, everybody, and have a great Shabbos.